Good evening. I'd like to call to order this special meeting of the Board of Education for Washington Local Schools. It is Monday, July 9th, 2018, and it is 6 o'clock p.m. Mr. Faulk, please call the roll.
Mr. Hughes.
Present.
Ms. Canales.
Present.
Mr. Ilstrup.
Present.
Mr. Hunter.
Present.
Mr. Sharp.
Yes.
Also present, Dr. Hayward, Mr. Davis, and myself.
Are we getting proper sound out there? I'm not hearing. We're not getting any sound. Wanting to make sure y'all can hear us. All right. With that being said, please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Thank God.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So you pull my chair off where it is. That's not funny.
That may be funny to you.
This evening, we have two presentations which are part of our agenda. The first of which is the folks from the Keep the Jail Downtown Toledo Group. Joyce Slusher and Mary Dutkowski will be coming forward, and they will be offering comments further to the board. And if the board has any questions for the group, please feel free to ask them at the conclusion of their presentation. So if you'd like to step forward and have a seat.
First, I'd like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to come back and speak to you about the Lucas County Jail or the proposed facility. As you are aware, the proposed jail site is on North Detroit near Alexis, located within the Washington Local School District. The Washington Local School District has had a few major challenges in the last year. We feel that the new jail is yet another major challenge. We are a grassroots organization that believes the jail belongs downtown and not in any neighborhood. The jail needs to be with the other support services such as the courts, shelters, attorneys, transportation. There's a tunnel that connects the jail to the courthouse. Attempts to discuss the issue with our county commissioners has been received with telling us that it's a done deal. We do not believe it's a done deal. We have reached out to city council members who agree with us, but their hands are tied against the county. Our only option was to petition to change the Toledo charter. Our petition states that if a jail is built in the city of Toledo, it must be built within the parameters of downtown. In an interview on May 30th, Sheriff Tharp stated that he thought the jail belonged downtown, but that it was not his decision. He also stated that many of the inmates should not be there. but rather get help from other mental health facilities. County officials have received grants from the MacArthur Foundation to reduce the jail population, while at the same time have been making plans for a larger jail. The county is not listening to the citizens and is not cooperating with the city to work out an alternative. Mayor Capsicavage and Councilwoman Sandy Spang suggested to Pete Gerken to build the mental health facility next to the existing jail and then to remodel the jail. They were simply told no. We are confident that our issue will pass and will be on the ballot. The entire project is Gerken's folly. The majority of residents do not understand why the county is doing this project and agree that a new jail is not needed at a cost of almost $180 million.
I'd like to talk to about the impact on the district. The new facility will be just 1 mile from three grade schools. Greenwood Elementary in Washington Local, obviously, is one. Bennett Venture Academy and Regina Shaley is a city school. And then in addition, a fourth school, Shoreland Elementary, is just 2 miles from the proposed site. Property values will drop in the immediate area, resulting in lower tax base and lower tax revenues for our district. This will be the result in any neighborhood, no matter where they put the jail. That's why we're going after no neighborhood. We do not want it, if property values drop in the immediate areas surrounding the jail, the school system would likely need to increase school taxes across the district then to account for that loss in tax revenue. The lower property values will spread across the district because people do not want it in a district to want to send their children to a school in a district that houses a jail. So it's really just a slippery slope. As soon as that goes in, property values in the immediate area will be impacted and then it will spread. Other less desirable business will follow the jail. These businesses will not be what we need in the area as we try to continue to revitalize that area and not devitalize it with the jail. Inmates being released from both the jail and those inmates from CCNO, the one down in Stryker, will be released from the steps of the county jail and for any new jail location. This will result in additional crime, homelessness, and some negative aspects in the surrounding areas. The storm and sewer systems in this area will not support a 655-bed facility. Flooding is already a major issue in the area. And then there's also two major creeks that run, corner the properties that are proposed. And obviously, that's going to cause issues with sewage and overflowing water lines into running into these creeks. This property was targeted in the City of Toledo 2020 plan to be for industrial use supporting Jeep. This would have offered Washington Local jobs and additional tax base for the area. Many have been working hard to revitalize the area. The jail will actually devitalize the area. And I'd like to add a comment in there that the jail is already downtown, and many of the areas in downtown areas accept those kind of facilities, just like they are today, more than in any neighborhood and trying to move it into any neighborhood. Okay. The reason to move the jail out of downtown town is not known, except that a design of the new jail was created before looking at options and respective pros and cons for each site. So they designed it as a campus style, one floor, and then they started looking for sites rather than keeping it open for just replacing or rehabilitating what they already have. The jail update today, as of today, what we know, the county is planning a 650-bed campus style on the proposed site, the same capacity of the Toledo Hospital. The county did a study with the DLR group in 2014. The design was such that a multi-floor solution would not fit the requirements. Thus, locations in downtown Toledo were not selected. We do not feel that this type of facility is required. The current jail is only 41 years young. built in 1977 to replace a jail that was 76 years old at a cost of $12 million at that time, which in today's dollars would be $58 million. And they're proposing something like $150, and then $25 for a mental health facility. The jail has not been maintained, and the sanitary conditions are despicable, as some of our own group have witnessed. The original design was to allow for additional floors to be built up for expansion. And the current jail would cost approximately $62 million to renovate. There are also other places that the county could have built, could use to build a new multi-floor jail. And Mary addressed a couple, one of those examples that Wade Kapakevich and Sandy Spang had recommended. The new proposed facility was last estimated at $180 million, but that is going to be over 37 years. So when people look at what the impact is going to be on their taxes, it may seem small, but our children, our grandchildren are going to pay for that. So what do we want from the Washington Local Board? Summary, we are looking for your support. We know that you wrote a resolution opposing the jail, but we need to do more. Help us get the information to the voters. We also need you to encourage Washington local voters to support our initiative by petitioning, signing the petition, and donating online if possible. We would like to see our board members sign our petition and take a petition to their own family and friends to have them sign to absorb the efforts of the Keep the Jail Downtown initiative to help support us. Also, we suggest that you meet with the county and city officials and express your objection to the new jail. By the way, we had met in an open forum, but our questions were never answered. Attend public meetings, of which the jail is a continual topic for both city and county officials, and be creative, because there's a lot of different things that we've come up with just on petitioning opportunities, and we're doing a great job in getting the number of signatures that we need. So we look forward to reviewing this information and answering your questions.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you.
Any questions, board?
I do. I've got a few questions. You're trying to change the charter language, and you say it has to be in downtown. Is downtown actually a defined area?
Yes,
it is. It is a defined area?
Definition used by the city of Toledo.
Okay, so it does have boundaries downtown?
Yes.
It exists in the city charter today, and that's exactly what we define.
Okay.
It
I was just wondering if there was actually a definition for it. There are three commissioners, am I correct?
Yes.
Is just one up for election right now?
Carol Contrada is not going to run.
Okay.
I think she is the only seat this time.
So that's what Sandy Spang is running for, and she's on board with your group.
Yes.
And the other two commissioners are not?
They are not up for re-election.
But are either one of them have any sway to them as far as?
No. The only one that, no.
So no. If Sandy gets on there, then she will be the one of three who would be opposed to the jail?
But by the time, our initiative will be on the ballot, and it will be over before she would take office.
You mentioned that there are 650 people that could be housed there. My question is, on the current jail, where it stands, how many inmates there are considered homeless at this time? So when they let them out the front doors, how many people that come out there do not have a home to go to?
We don't really know the answer to that. What we do know is when they're released, they're just put out the door. However, unfortunately, we know that the jail population is going to be the lower income in a lot of cases. In the same interview where Sheriff Tharp stated that he believed the jail should stay downtown, he also stated that many of the inmates at the jail did not belong there for mental health issues.
The reason I asked that question is last time I was watching or reading the paper about inmates, it had mentioned a lot of them that their residence was the Cherry Street Mission. So they didn't really have residence. So I'm thinking if they're going to be released into our community and they have nowhere to go, they're going to stay in this area. And even
to that point, something that we did not bring up, there really isn't bus service. Anitarda that would be consistently running past the jail. How are they going to go back downtown? And that's where we believe that's where they would get help.
How many signatures are on each petition page that you have?
Each petition is 50 signatures.
Could I have one now?
Yes.
I have a few questions also. Myself and, is this on? Doesn't seem like it. Is it on?
Yes.
Okay. Myself and our superintendent went to one of your forums, or I should say their forum, and it was kind of like a roundabout. There was not really a debate, but you couldn't ask questions at that last one that was downtown, and I was a little disappointed with that. And I certainly have been a little disappointed with our commissioners of not listening, and even that this is going to be in our backyard, have not returned my phone calls either, which has never happened.
They did give us the opportunity to come to a meeting and ask questions, and probably 30 or more people stood up and spoke.
Okay.
And we just received smiles from all three commissioners, not one answer. At the end of the meeting, we were just kind of told, it's a done deal.
Yeah, that's
not
acceptable.
And when they went to Angola Road, was one of the first option, they did have a public forum where they answered questions. But from what we understand from some city council members that were there, they pretty got beat up pretty bad by the Angola folks. But when we went, it was a lot of people spoke, 30, 40 people spoke, but sure, none of our questions that were addressed to them were answered.
Yeah, that's exactly what I heard too, because they did get beat up quite a bit over
there.
And they also, it's out of their backyard.
Right.
So I know that the mental health part of that is, I know that some of the inmates, and I think, and I could be wrong on my numbers, but I thought it was over 70% of the inmates that are in there have some type of mental health issues.
And we don't,
I know it's high,
have an exact number on that. All we have learned is that many.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, myself, I don't want to speak for everybody else, but myself, I would love to take a petition. I will be happy to help you, and I will be more than happy to sign your petition and anything that we can do. So.
I'd like a copy myself.
I have to say something before I give you guys a petition. You cannot sign your own petition.
Okay.
If you do, the entire petition is invalid.
We'll just pass it around.
Please sign each other.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll sign each other.
And there's a one-page training document that is very simple, but it does give you some basic rules so that we all have to follow. So it's, and we can go over that with you if you would
probably
like.
Probably the most important thing to remember is it's a city issue, city of Toledo.
So it has to be
Washington
a Lucas County voter, registered voter?
Registered voters.
In Lucas
Washington
County.
Washington Township can't sign, Maumee, Perrysburg,
okay,
because this is a city issue. The levy will be a county issue, but this particular initiative is city only.
So we always ask, are you a registered voter in the city of Toledo? And you can validate that. Do you vote for the mayor of Toledo? Then that qualifies them to sign your petition.
Okay. How many signatures do you need to put this on
we
the ballot?
A minimum of 5,300 valid signatures.
To put it on the
and
ballot.
But we're targeting 9 or 10,000 because sometimes they, you know, people will think they're registered or they put the different address or a lot of them will come through. Yep. But most petitioners will go after that number.
How many signatures do you have already?
That is the question everyone asks us, and we have just chosen. We have enough.
We have enough. Let's put it that way.
Every elected official knows that until we're over.
That is the ultimate question mark.
Yes.
But
we're doing well.
Very well.
I just have. I'm sorry.
So, well, another question. When these inmates have court dates and things like that, are they being transported back and forth downtown from this facility?
Well, what they're saying is that they're going to use video conferencing or Skype.
Okay.
And, yeah, I like your smile because, you know, if I were before a judge, I would want to be face-to-face, one
right,
with my accuser and or the judge. So
right.
I think, you know, technology is great, and it might work in some cases.
Yeah.
But it's not going to work in all those cases. So, yes, they were going to have transportation costs and safety issues
right
in transporting them.
And you're talking extra security measures and everything. You know, vehicle use, gas, whatever.
Right.
So there's added costs there on taxpayers. So
unfortunately, it seems that so many people, their hands are tied, and they really cannot speak out because it's a county issue. But we have talked to a lot of people that feel that they think that the one on trial should have the opportunity to face the judge.
Absolutely.
And the judge should have the opportunity to see their mannerisms, how they
sure.
react.
Yeah.
You know, better decisions can be made.
Ladies, can I just ask you, because I think we all have these, what do you need from us? I know that we need to have these signed and we sign each other's. When are these due to you?
July 31st.
July 31st? Okay.
If you call, I'll give you a couple phone numbers that you can call. We'll pick them up from you.
Okay.
They have to be notarized.
Mm-hmm. And you need us to do that, have them notarized?
Yes.
Okay.
Because what you'll be signing or attesting to is that you witnessed every signature
okay.
on that
mm-hmm.
petition.
That's
right.
The last page. On the petition.
Okay.
And this is
yeah.
not limited to Washington local residents. This is all Toledo
this
residents.
This is the city. Any
okay.
city of Toledo.
Yep. Any city of Toledo resident. Okay.
And we have tried to expand west and south. And, I mean, we've got some more ground that we could cover.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this is the impact area, though, right now. So we wanted to make sure we got in front of this group.
You should have no problem getting this done.
So changing the charter will supersede whatever the county vote is on the jail, correct?
Yes.
So if the jail levy passes,
yes.
this and this passes at the ballot, this will supersede the jail bond.
Yes, but there's no guarantee.
They can build a jail, but they have to build a jail.
But this would prevent them from building within the city limits.
But we're not kidding ourselves. It could end up in courts. It could go through a lot. But our job would be done. It would depend on how hard they would decide to fight. It could, you know, appeals, it could take forever.
Do you have an attorney on board with your group that's kind of representing or heading for you?
We had an attorney that looked at our petition and went over it before we put it out. We're not in daily contact at the present time.
Right now we're focused on getting those petition signatures.
Well, I certainly hope that our voters are listening to this tonight because, you know, with everything, we need to pass our levy, and this affects that. So I really hope that everybody's listening and that they take it serious because it is really close to being in our backyards with our kids, and that's not fair to our kids. So,
not at all. We agree.
Thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening.
Joyce, Mary, thank you again.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Hi.
How about a button?
Hi, Sandy.
Hi there.
Just like your button. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
My name is Sandy Bayshelter.
And you are also running against the jail as a commissioner?
I'm running
as a commissioner,
yes, correct.
Against the jail. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Sandy. All right. We'll turn it over to Dr. Hayward. Our next presentation then deals with construction issues.
At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Jeff Parker from SHP Leading Design. He's going to give us a presentation on facilities and construction.
Thank you, Dr. Hayward. Appreciate your time tonight. I'm a little part about how the pages here, so I apologize. As Dr. Hayward mentioned, my name is Jeff Parker. I'm from SHP, and I need a microphone.
How's that? Is that better? Is that better? Okay. With me tonight is Shay McMahon. Shay McMahon is out of our Columbus office. He specializes in analytics and community engagement, which is a significant part of any kind of a project like you guys are anticipating. My name's Jeff again. I do master planning and educational design for the firm. We have been in business, not Shay and I, but the firm has been in business for 117 years, I think, now. So we've been at it for a long time. We pride ourselves in the work we do for public schools. My goal today is to kind of give you a 30,000-foot view of what the process is like when working with the OFCC on facilities. I'm really just going to kind of skate across the tops of the issues. I'm happy to drill in. If you have questions, please feel free to interrupt, okay? I want to make this as valuable and productive for you as we can. So this is kind of where I was hoping to go tonight with regard to an agenda. The first four items, rank, funding, enrollment, and assessment, are all things that have kind of been largely done to this point. The last two, enrollment and assessment, there's some give and take on. So if the district has concerns or doesn't agree with the state's findings, there's an opportunity to push back on that. But the district has already received information from the state as far as where they think we are. The last two are about options and timing, and that's really where you all and your community begin to speak into the process and where the solution begins to really reflect the constituents of Washington Local. Okay. So the first one being ranked. Rank is driven by your three-year average valuation per pupil. Okay, there are 610 districts right now, and Washington Local is ranked at 139. I apologize, it's a little hard to see in the red there. So that means that you're in the 23rd percentile of all Ohio school districts. Said differently, 77% of Ohio school districts have greater value per pupil than Washington Local. Okay. What that means is that the state, if you opt to partner with the state in any kind of a program, is willing to fund 77% of the project cost. Okay, so 77 cents on the dollar, leaving 23%, what we refer to as the local share. Okay. Which would be paid by Washington Local. With regard to enrollment, the state has been in communication with the district's student attendance folks and have really been working hard to get accurate information as far as kids in the district. Currently we have about 7,100 students in the district. The state's enrollment projection shows you in 10 years dropping by roughly 100. It's pretty flat. It's flatter than what we see in a lot of places in the state. So that's a good thing. When districts have a declining enrollment population, they don't want to build for that 10-year outlook, right? Because typically a project like this, if you decide to proceed, takes about 5 years to get in. So if we build a building in that you occupy in 5 years, that's for your 10-year projection, it's going to be too small. Okay. So that being said, with declining enrollment, they're going to plan for, you know, just over 77,000 students in the district. Okay, so they target out 5 years. Does that make sense? Great. The next piece is the assessment, and this is a really big piece of the puzzle. The state has consultants that they send to the district, and they go through all of your buildings, okay? All the nooks and crannies, they meet with facility staff, they take pictures of everything, and these items, we call them the A through W's, are the different categories that the state really digs into. They want to quantify and measure the quality of your buildings on those standards, okay? Every building in the state is measured on that, so it's consistent, okay? A couple rules about working with the OFCC. is that they don't want to build a new school or renovate a new school for anything less than 350 students. Okay, so that's the minimum that they will go. They also have this thing that's called the two-thirds rule. The two-thirds rule essentially means that if the cost of renovating a building exceeds two-thirds the cost of replacing a building, they would recommend that you just go ahead and replace it. Okay? So if, and we will dig into this a little bit longer, but a little bit later, there are waivers available. So if there are buildings that have significant emotional value in the district or political value in the district, you know, there can be conversation about that. So it's not a mandated kind of rule, but they're really going to encourage you strongly to consider replacing things that exceed that two-thirds rule. So I'm going to run through, I'm going to try to do it quickly. If you have questions, again, stop me. But this is what the assessment tells us. Okay, again, they've gone through every building. I'm just going to run through them in order, and we'll move on from here. But what you see here is Greenwood. It was first built in 1958 with a series of additions. It has almost 42,000 square feet. To renovate that building to meet OFCC standards, they say it's $7.1 million. Okay. Now, OFCC standards should not be confused with building code. This is not to imply that anything you have is non-compliant. All right. This is only about complying with OFCC standards, not about building code. The enrollment today is 534, and the state says the capacity in that building is 334 students. Okay, so they measure that really based on square footage and number of classrooms. So this is really just what they're telling us, and I'm just trying to convey that to you. The site is 7.8 acres. Hiawatha, again, 1958, a little smaller at 39,000 feet. Renovation cost is a little greater. You can see here that Hiawatha exceeds that two-thirds rule at 73%. 358 kids currently with a capacity of 304. So again, buildings that are smaller than 350, the state really doesn't want to have anything to do with them. Actually will not have anything to do with them unless they are adding on capacity. And again, a very small site at 4.6 acres. Jackman, even earlier in 1954, 36,000 feet, again, exceeding that two-thirds limit, again, well below the minimum, but a little bit larger site here at 11 acres. McGregor, built in 1962 with some work in 2016, 52,000 feet to renovate it is $8 million, 61% of that replacement value. This one, this one exceeds that 350 minimum and again is on a pretty gracious site at 10 acres. Meadowvale, built in 1963, 54,000 feet, right on the bubble at 66%. Monarch, built in 1955 with several additions, 46,000 feet, again, just below that two-thirds. When architects look at assessments, there's kind of a push and pull that occurs. So if the district believes that these assessments are not correct, your pre-bond architect has the authority to challenge those findings and to work with the state and to work with the state's consultant to get that number accurate. So if the district believes that, you know, these assessment values are off one way or the other, we can help you identify the characteristics of the building that would rectify that. Okay, so we can go through that assessment with you and with your team. Shoreland Elementary, 1930, 70% of that two-thirds limit, a really nice site here at 13 acres, and one of the larger elementary schools. Warnert, 1917, we're going back in time here, 62,000 feet, again, right on the bubble. It's a little hard for me to believe that a building that was started in 1917 is right on the bubble. Kind of intuitively, I would expect it to be to require a little more work. That implies, perhaps, that you guys have done a really good job taking care of these buildings. 4.6 acres Westwood, which is currently the preschool, as I understand, built in 1930 with a lot of work done to it over the years. 46,000 feet. This one's the oddball to me. They say to bring this up to standard, it's only 45% of the replacement value. Intuitively, that doesn't make sense to me, so I want to dig into that a little bit more if we choose to proceed. It may be exactly right. It just doesn't seem right to me just at first glance. Again, below that 350 limit, and again, a pretty small site at 3.7 acres. Jefferson Junior High, opened in 1927, 106,000 square feet. To renovate it is $20 million, and again, that's exceeding the replacement, the two-thirds replacement value. These next three sites, they're all 54.6 acres, so they are combining both the junior highs and the high school campuses on that 54-acre site. Washington Junior High, built in 1951, almost as big at 103,000 feet, just over that two-thirds limit. Again, 54 acres. And finally, Whitmer Senior, started in 1958, 441,000 square feet. It's a big building. There's a lot there. $62 million to renovate it, and that is currently 58% of the replacement value. Okay. All right. So this is kind of the summary of what I just kind of ran by you. The red numbers indicate buildings that are below that 350 student minimum. Okay. And over here in the two-thirds rule, the red are the numbers that exceed the two-thirds minimum, and the bold black are the numbers that I would consider are on the bubble. Okay. So just for what it's worth, that's much of the background that the state has done so far. So, and that really brings us kind of to where we are today, which is really what are the options? What are the options for Washington Local? And I like to think of them in kind of four sizes. They're small, medium, large, and extra large. And they look kind of like this. The first one is the small one. It's just keep doing what you're doing. Right? You put away money to take care of things. You have a maintenance schedule. When things break, you fix them. That's just kind of doing it how we do it now. The medium approach is a permanent improvement plan. It could be funded by PI. It could be funded by a levy. Down here is that list of the A through W's. And you may say that, you know what, it's not important to us to upgrade finishes, but we do want to upgrade security, and this gives the district the opportunity to kind of go through each building and pick out very specific items that kind of right-size it, or that right-size it for Washington Local, okay? So that's an opportunity to dial back, but there's no co-funding in this model, right? The state isn't going to help with this. The next one is large. And it takes care of all of those A through W items. It brings all those buildings up to the state's standards, either by renovating them or replacing them. Now, because of the magnitude of your district and the cost of a potential project here, the state is probably going to encourage you to do what we call segmentation. So you would do a portion of the project first, and then in years ahead, years down the road, you would come back and you would complete the master plan. Okay? So that's a way to not only minimize the state's exposure, but it's also a way to minimize the exposure to your constituents of what, you know, what would come out of a bond levy. All right, does that make sense? Yeah? And finally is the extra large, and that's just to take care of all the buildings and do it all right away, be renovate or replace. I don't think that that's really a viable option from the state standpoint. They don't have that kind of money sitting around to do that. If they were to write Washington Local a check to do all that, there would be a lot of other districts who are very, very frustrated. So I think that should you guys choose to proceed, it's probably in this number three range in that large level.
Excuse me, if we go the segmentation route,
yes.
What guarantee is there that state funds are available when we get to the master plan years down
Thank
the line?
You. I was going to ask that.
There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee because the legislatures change, the people making the rules change. There's no guarantee. Now, we have worked with many districts who have gone this route, and they've been successful, but I can't tell you today that that will happen again.
How much of that plan is done on that first phase?
It varies. It really varies by what is palatable to your constituents. I would suspect it's probably about 50%. That's usually what we see. Okay.
Would it be safe to say that we're sort of late to the game just because we've waited?
Yeah.
Intentionally?
Yes.
So are monies dwindling quickly, and are we at greater risk than those districts that maybe had good percentages right off the bat?
It's up to the state to refund this program every 2 years, right? So, and every 2 years they're putting more money into that pot. So they're not continuing to spend down the original dollars. So dollars are being reallocated every 2 years for the program. I will say, though, that a lot of the districts who we are serving who have kind of waited their turn, they are in the, instead of paying 23% locally, they may be paying 45 or 65%.
Right.
Okay, because their valuation is greater.
We actually had this done previously, it was the OFC, not the OFCC.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And they came back to us, and they were only offering us 20 cents on the dollar. And so we said there was no way we were going to do it. So, I mean, our waiting and our reevaluation has brought us into a much better light.
That's
My
correct.
Question is, isn't there something between L and XL as far as segmentation? Can't we pick what we want to do in the whole picture and not go with everything that they wanted to renovate? Could we say we'd like to look at these three buildings?
Yes, that's a great question, and let me get into that right now. This graphic is really just an attempt to illustrate where you have kids today in what buildings. So the vertical columns here are grade levels, pre-K through 12th grade, okay? And then the white boxes here, the white shapes, are the different buildings that are serving those populations. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So, pardon me. We have all of our pre-Ks in Westwood. We've got K through 6th in our elementary schools. We have 7th and 8th grade in Jefferson and Washington. And, of course, all of our high school kids are over at Whitmer, right? So the state did just kind of a what-if scenario. This is what they would deem the most cost-effective, but I don't think they would endeavor to force you to do this. This is, let's pretend we renovate everything we can. We replace one elementary school. The blue here indicates an addition to expand the capacity of those buildings. You recall many of those buildings were too small, so we need to expand the capacity of those. All the yellow represents renovated buildings, okay? So in the state's initial plan, and they called it draft, so no one thinks this is the right answer. This is just kind of to start the dialogue. They were renovating most everything, some additions at a few of the elementaries, replacing Shoreland, and demoing Warner, okay? So that's one approach. I don't think the state thinks that's the right answer. I suspect you guys don't think that's the right answer. It could be. But the other end of the spectrum would look like this, or could look like this, where instead of having, I believe it is 8 elementary schools, maybe we consolidate into 5 elementary schools. Maybe there's one new junior high school and one new Whitmer High School. That would be more the kind of extra large size of the spectrum. Okay. Now, I don't think this is necessarily right, the right answer either. So how do we determine what the right answer is? That's kind of where the magic has to occur. We believe that any successful plan has to be educationally appropriate, right? It has to work for learning. It has to work for our kids. We believe it has to be financially responsible. It has to work for the coffers of the district. It has to work for your constituents, right? And finally, your constituents have to support it. They have to believe that it's the right answer. So instead of some paid consultant coming in and saying this is the right answer for you and you forcing everyone to think the same, it's more about listening to you and to your constituents to help articulate what that right solution is, okay?
If you go back to the previous slide, obviously that would require a substantial amount of redistricting.
Yes.
At what point in the process would you then recommend we go out to the community and say, hey, your student might not be going to a neighborhood school.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yep.
How do we approach that?
I think the sooner the better. So this is just kind of a graphic timeline of how we might see things working. If we're targeting some kind of a voter decision in November, you know, if it needs to go to the voters, I wouldn't presume that it does, but should it, a recommendation needs to be made to the board in kind of June, July, right? So you can get on the ballot in time. If we back all that up, we really need to be getting started this fall, okay? There are four groups that we like to work with in this process, okay? The first one is this facility steering team. It's composed of board representation, typically two board members. You can't have everyone because in it, every meeting would be a board meeting, right? And representatives from the administration. That team will communicate with the OFCC. The OFCC representative will come and meet with that team periodically. That team will discuss operational efficiencies, concerns about busing, concerns about how do we serve special needs students, concerns about what grade levels are right for our buildings. They'll discuss the realities of funding. What does that mean? They'll discuss enrollment, and that team will also really help vet the sites. You know, you'll recall that many of your sites are small. You know, 3-4 acres, right? The state likes to have a little more room. You know, with a little more room on a campus, you can help keep the kids safe. You help keep the buses separate from the parents dropping off, separate from the teachers trying to get into their classroom, right? So they like a certain amount of acreage for a building. So that's the sort of issue that this executive steering team, that this facility steering team will address, okay? The next group is the community advisory team. This is a standing group. They are lightning rod people in the community. They're people who are connected. They're not all cheerleaders. They're even thinkers, right? They're even keeled. You want people who can see the positive and negative of a situation and measure it and make good decisions on it. You also want people who can reflect the concerns of the community and who can project the data that they're being given back out into the community. So it's kind of, those people are kind of a two-way street, two-way mouthpiece, if you will. Okay. Let's see. We also have community forums because we want everyone to be able to hear, right? So this group, the community advisory team, they're the ones who would say, you know what, we're really not interested in redistricting all of our elementary schools. Or they might say, you know what, we believe that we'd like to consider pushing our sixth grade up with our junior high to create more of a middle school setting, right? So the constituents will help put those ideas on the table and kind of help rank them, vet them, and kind of ferret out the ones that are obvious losers. And then we can go to open community forums and have your community really speak into directly the process. So we might take a handful of solutions to a community forum and give them the chance to actually react real time. Shay has had some exciting experiences with this recently with some of the technology that we use, and we get a lot of great feedback. The beauty of it is that when we leave, everyone knows what the feedback was. It's right there on the screen. It's not, you know, kind of hidden away in my briefcase and I whisk it away out the door at the end of the night. It's up there on screen. Everyone sees it. Everyone knows kind of what the direction is and why. Also, we would recommend that there be some concept testing with that group and probably beyond that group so that we get some real scientific measurable data from a broader section, a broader sample of your community. Does that make sense? Okay. Am I kind of covering what you were asking? Okay. Mm-hmm. Finally, the last piece is educational visioning. You know, what you are about is teaching our students, right? That's the charge of Washington Local. And we know as educational planning experts that learning looks different today than it does when I was in high school, right? The things that our students need to know is different. It's not different, it's expanded. It's more than what I needed to know. The skills are broader. So we would propose assembling a team to really consider the educational vision of Washington Local. What is appropriate for your students? What do your students need to be successful into the future? Into really a future that seems to be changing more and more and more. How do we create an environment that will support that? The beauty of the educational visioning process is that it really begins to help demonstrate the need, if there is one, demonstrate the need that something needs to be done. Okay, that continuing to teach in the facilities we are in today isn't really going to serve the needs of our students the best in the future. All right? So that's kind of the process that we like to work within. It's kind of four pieces. And these timelines, these groups, they may kind of push and pull as we move through, but that's kind of how it works. So once we get to a recommendation to the board, so that facility steering team are the ones that take that recommendation to the board, then we get to back out and think about it more like this. So if we are having a board recommendation here, and should we need a ballot, that it would occur in November, right? So the OFCC, the Ohio Facility Construction Commission, meets twice a year in January and July, and that is when they will offer you funding, okay? Now, we'll be in communication with your planner, who is currently Eugene Chapiga, who's assigned by the state from the OFCC, so that you have some assurance that it is coming in January. Or, no, it's not coming this January, but it's coming next January, right? So we won't be kind of walking blind into this. We'll be able to test the waters, if you will, so that you know the right time to go to your voters. Okay? So I wanted to show you just a few samples of what OFCC learning environments are looking like, just to kind of begin to allow you to visualize what the future might be like should you and your constituents choose to go here. These are elementary settings. You can see we still have classrooms, right? But we have a lot of more kind of flexible interactive learning settings as well. A cafeteria with a nice stage here. Another elementary school, nice big gymnasiums with a lot of natural light. The OFCC requires that all their buildings be LEED certified. LEED, that stands for Leadership and Energy Efficient Design. And that comes with that. It's a third-party registration or designation that assures a certain level of energy efficiency. Okay, so the state doesn't want to pour a lot of money into these buildings that are going to not run efficiently into the future. So that's why they do that. And you can begin to see the amount of daylight coming into spaces throughout the building. This is kind of an elementary driven makerspace. There's a lot of research that demonstrates how the act of making things, how using what I'm learning in math and what I'm learning in science and then building something that supports that, how that really cements the learning. It makes the learning seat deeper.
Yes. Is that person or that third party who works on the LEE, is
yes.
he contracted as part of the OFCC monies?
It's part of the project.
Honeywell or somebody like that?
No, it's LEED is a separate third-party organization. So all the project participants, the designers, the contractors, they all have submissions to make to that LEED group, and they are reviewed and vetted and confirmed, hopefully.
Who is a LEED group? Can you throw a name out to me?
It's LEED.
Oh, that's what it is.
It is LEED, yes.
Okay, so they are.
It's the USGBC, the United States Green Building Council.
Okay.
Right, and it's a LEED certification.
And then so they actually approve what they're putting to them.
Yep. Okay. And if you want, you can get a nice plaque for a few $100s. Right. Imagine that. This is more of a high school setting. We're seeing a lot of movement in high school to the more kind of social and emotional skills. And those skills take kind of being able to work together, being able to collaborate with my peers, being able to share ideas. So we're creating spaces that do that. You can see kind of in the background here, there are more traditional classroom settings, but this really begins to feel more like a college setting, a little more interactive, a little more collaborative. Again, Makerspace, this is from Dr. Hayward's previous district, which is a really great project. They're doing some really exciting things there. And finally, public spaces. So gymnasiums are part of that. Now, I will say that the state is sticklers. They don't want to build arenas, right? They want to build gymnasiums. They're about physical education. They're not about competition, right? They're not about schools competing against each other. So, but this arena is, in fact, funded by the state, was, in fact, funded by the state. This is a kind of multi-use space at a high school. It kind of sits right in the heart of the building. It serves as the lobby for games, the lobby for the auditorium, for intermission. It also serves as overflow from the library. It serves as a small assembly space, but this space also serves as a cafeteria. So this space is jumping all day long. Right, there's always activity here. So that's another great way to drive some efficiency into your projects. So I've talked a lot. Any questions I can answer?
We'll take it.
So some of the discussion that this board has had, and tell me if we're on track then, is that without a levy, an operating levy right now, we can't go to this next step. But the minute we get our operating levy passed, we should immediately go into this step. Am I correct?
I believe that's correct, yes, okay. Sir.
Yep. That's kind of what we had decided. We need to get the levy passed mm-hmm. and then immediately turn our attention to this goal.
Right.
So you had us start in October, but if we were to pass our levy in November, we could actually just squeak that over a little bit and get right into it.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that would be in January? So it would...
When we were to start...
We pass it and then...
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, you could even, you know, the blue bar that was the steering facility steering team. Some of those activities, if you have an appetite for them, can be started now, and we can begin kind of putting those details in place and coming up with some of those preliminary ideas for your constituents.
I just don't want to see the community think we're muddying waters and making plans before they
agreed
tell us to go
yes.
ahead.
Yeah. Yep. It can be a short fuse, though, if we're starting in January and trying to get to November. It can be...
Well, you could even start in the middle of November, giving you all November, December. You know, I mean, it's...
Yeah, you can.
It could be ready to go.
Yes.
So we would know potentially in January or July if we would get funding.
Potentially, yes. And I will say that... The state used to be really good about saying this is when your number will be called, right? But that has changed. So right now, everyone's kind of racing to the dollars. All the districts are trying to get there first, and that's really how they're beginning to approach funding it. So if you come with cash in hand, the state is much more likely to say, "Yeah, we can squeeze you in here," than if you're just saying, "Well, what if?" What if we were ready then? they'd say, well, what if I had 12 other districts say they were ready too, right?
Are there standard designs that are being used as a sort of a jumping off platform for these committees when they start talking about school construction?
Well, I would say no. In my experience, every solution is really tailored and tuned to the district, to the community. You know, so obviously Washington Local, you guys have more buildings than a lot of other districts, right, just because of your size. So that implies a different starting point. You know, there are some, I think intuitively there are some things that would make sense to all of us that would serve as that starting point that we would vet with the steering and the facilities advisory team.
Jeff, I hope you didn't answer this already, but assuming that we would have everything in January, what's the turnaround time that we would actually have?
Buildings?
Well, not buildings, but at least letting us know if we made the cut or if we're ready to move, if this district is ready to move forward.
Well, I mean, you will be notified in January or July.
January
if
or July?
If you are funded, yeah.
Oh, okay.
How long?
But it is after your fund, after you have your funding in place.
Right, right. No,
so the state knows that Washington Local is interested in an opportunity. There's been no commitment made, no promises made. Washington Local is just saying, hey, we're a little interested in this. We don't know if it'll fit or not, but tell us more.
Okay.
That's kind of what the process has been to date. So as we advance and as the reality becomes more clear and as your operating levy kind of lands, the timing will begin to fall into place.
And so we proceed based upon what we know to be the current percentages.
Yes.
Have any districts experienced a drawback, say that
yes,
you thought we were getting 75% and all of a sudden, oops, it's only 60%?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Now, there are typically trends, so very seldom do we see a significant spike back up if your percentage is declining or vice versa. So you could begin to extrapolate those out. The other variable is the construction cost. So right now with talk of tariffs and trade wars, contractors are really anxious, right? So there are impacts on construction costs. So those, I believe it is April when the ranking is reviewed and September when the construction dollars are reviewed. And the state has kind of different regions for dollars per square foot per area of the state. So they do their best to tune it to Toledo. But it has occurred where districts' ranking has pushed or pulled over the course of a few years. Shay.
The change in your percentage is based on a 3-year valuation average. So typically the kind of leap that you're describing that would really significantly change the construction cost, that's something you'd be able to see and kind of prepare for in the years ahead, if that makes sense.
Yeah, great one. Thank you, Chef.
Is the state fairly insistent on their way or the highway? For example, if they believe that we should eliminate 4 of our elementary buildings and consolidate,
mm-hmm.
and we say, no, that's not going to work for us.
They're really not. They are intent on the master plan reflecting the community. Now, some smaller communities, you know, less than, say, 1,500, they don't have the flexibility. There's just, you know, there's some efficiencies that the state is going to mandate on you. For a district like Washington Local, I think you have a lot of flexibility to really drive or to determine the solution yourselves. The state is going to speak into that a lot, but they will really let it reflect your community.
So the master plan is very fluid and can be very based on all these steering committees.
Until you go to the ballot,
then
it has to be locked in at the state level. Now, your ballot language doesn't have to say anything about we're building 8 new elementaries and whatever. You can just say dollars for construction of new school facilities. So it could be ambiguous enough to give you some flexibility, but the state is going to need to know which plan you're going with because that affects the total cost of your plan. Okay?
Are there districts quite near here that are still going through this process that we might speak with?
There are. I'm sure there are districts quite near here. We have worked. I'm from out of our Cincinnati office. Shay's out of our Columbus office. We have a district, actually several, that we can refer you to. The process is ongoing. There are a lot of folks around kind of doing it also and doing it successfully. So if you like, we can get you a list.
We'd obviously like somebody who's comparable to our size.
And sure, yeah, and that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, right?
In terms of your size and the scale of your project and where you fall on the ranking list, a question that was asked earlier was fairly correct, that there aren't many districts your size that has not accepted funding, and there are not very many districts near you on the ranked priority list that have not accepted funding. So you are unique to the state in some ways in both of those realms.
We had an opportunity years ago to see what Lima went through with their rebuilding 11 schools, and that was, you know, very helpful for us as far as seeing what we could possibly do. Yeah.
And that's a Southwestern is a good example of a segmented project or program. And so they passed a bond for the initial portion, which was replacing, I think, all 13 of the elementary schools. The second half will be middle schools, and there may be a third that will be high schools.
Point of clarification, you mentioned in your presentation Whitmer High School. Did that include the Whitmer High School building as well as the CTC, or are they considered
the Career Tech building was included in that?
Okay.
Yep. And the state affords you dollars and square footage to re-implement those programs.
Now, for instance, I have a question. The Whitmer campus, we have a lot of sports facilities there. If we would decide to rebuild or renovate or knock down, rebuild, what happens to our different sports facilities?
I don't know. So that's part of what that blue executive steering team really needs to wrestle with, right? So with the help of your pre-bond architect, we can look at site configurations and say, well, okay, we obviously don't want to move 2,300 students into mobile classrooms, right? We want to do our best to keep them in place. What's the impact on the rest of our campus? Or is there another campus somewhere? I suspect not. But, you know, how do we crack that nut? And that's part of the conversation that group will have, and that process will help bring to light. You're just really beginning to pull at the thread of that, of the issues here. Anything else I can help with?
Sure.
Jeff, what do you think will be our biggest challenge moving forward?
I'd say typically, and not knowing Washington local like you all do, one of the challenges is messaging, you know, just communicating to your constituents the realities of what the opportunity is, of what the better solutions look like and why. You know, and that's why getting that facility advisory team in place and getting the right people on that team who can listen and parrot that information back out and distribute that information back out. I think in my estimation, that's probably one of the bigger challenges. Shay, do you have? Okay.
So if we're not successful with our levy in November, mm-hmm. this could back this plan up significantly.
Yeah, you get to pick when you start.
I'm sure we'll have more questions as we go along, but we thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate the opportunity.
So that was a perfect presentation.
Exhibit 3. Resolution for statutory competitive bidding process and award of contract for secure vestibules. The security vestibule project is not required to be competitively bid under Ohio Revised Code Section 3313.46, as the installation of security vestibules is aimed at providing for the security and protection of school property under the statute. Nevertheless, we solicited and received competitive proposals to perform the required installation work. The superintendent recommends that the Board of Education approve the resolution for authority to waive the statutory competitive bidding requirements for the contract for security vestibule project, as recommended by Stow and Stow, as presented.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Hunter. I will second. Discussion?
So once again, I just want to reiterate that this decision is not as much being decided on by the board as it was demanded by the community in our forums and concerns. And I would say this is the first major step we've made to responding physically and with monies to those demands. I think the secure vestibules is probably number one on many, many lists that we saw. So I would say this is certainly listening to the community 100%.
Anyone else? There being none, call the roll, please.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Mr. Ostrup?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Exhibit 4, Board of Education Policy. The superintendent recommends that the Board of Education approve the policy as presented.
So moved.
Motion by Ms. Canales.
Second.
Second by Mr. Hughes. Discussion?
I had just a moment before the board meeting to touch base with Christy Martin, and both this number 4 and number 5 are they do coincide now, and they both are parallel to each other as our discussion from last board meeting. So if anybody, that's their question, it is in line.
That was my question.
Any other? Call the roll, please.
Mr. Ostrup?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Exhibit 5, Student Handbooks Amendment. The superintendent recommends that the Board of Education approve the amendment for the junior high and high school student handbooks for the 2018-2019 school year as presented.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Hunter.
Second.
Second by Mr. Hughes. Discussion?
Thanks for quickly responding to that, both you guys, and getting us in line, and that's great.
Any other? There being none, call the roll, please.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Mr. Ostrup?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Exhibit 6, purchases over $25,000. The maintenance department requests carpet replacement for the Whitmer Nightingale Center in the amount of $32,986. Per policy 6320, the superintendent recommends that the Board of Education approve the purchases over $25,000 as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Hunter, second by Ms. Canales. Discussion? Bring none, call the roll, please.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Mr. Ostrup?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Exhibit 7, the superintendent recommends that the Board of Education enter into executive session 2, number 2, consider the employment of a public employee or official. Number 8, consider the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or student. Number 18, discuss details relative to the security arrangements and emergency response protocols for the Board of Education.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Hunter, second by Ms. Canales. Call the roll, please.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Mr. Ostrup?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0 in executive session at 7:13 p.m.
Let the record reflect that at 7:41 p.m., the Washington Local Board of Education returned from executive session having in fact considered the employment of a public employee or official, consider the investigation of charges or complaints against a public employee, official, licensee, or student, and discuss details relative to the security arrangements and emergency protocols for the Board of Education, items number 2, 8, and 18. All five members of the Board of Education return from executive session. Dr. Hayward.
Exhibit 8, personnel. The superintendent recommends that the Board of Education approve via consent motion personnel items as presented.
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Hughes.
Second.
Second by Mr. Sharp. Discussion. I'll make a statement. Michael Punselin has submitted his resignation from the employment with Washington Local School District, stating that he resigned for personal reasons. This spring, concerns were raised regarding Mr. Punselin's communication and interaction with students. This board takes concerns related to student well-being very seriously. Our human resources staff immediately initiated an investigation as required by board policy. During the course of such investigation, teachers are provided with an opportunity to respond to concerns or allegations lodged against them, and they are permitted to have union representation or legal counsel to advise them. Mr. Punselin had both. I have spoken at length with Jane Spurgeon, Washington Local Schools interim HR director, and she has indicated to me that she will complete her investigation before month's end and report to the board accordingly. On a final note, Ohio law requires that a report be made to the Ohio Department of Education Office of Professional Conduct if a teacher resigns during the course of any investigation. That's pursuant to Ohio Revised Code 3319.313. The resignation of Mr. Punselin triggered such a report to ODE, and Ms. Spurgeon filed that report earlier today. I have nothing further.
I might want to just add a comment here, Tom, that also in our notes tonight is a gentleman who's going to be taking over as an assistant principal. Am I correct? And I believe he's out in the audience there with his family, and I think it'd just be nice if we acknowledge Mr. Kohlhofer. Is that how I say it? Did I say it correctly? And you're coming from Springfield, is that correct?
Yes.
So,
Dr.
In a minute,
Brandt, can you come forward and introduce him?
Good evening. I'm Lisa Grant, the principal at Jefferson Junior High School, and I'm delighted to introduce Mr. Frank Kohlhofer. Mr. Kohlhofer is on the board agenda this evening to be hired as the associate principal at Jefferson Junior High School, and he comes to us from Springfield Local Schools, and I'd like to welcome him up here to introduce himself and his family to you.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. I'm Frank Kohlhofer. Like she said, I came from Springfield High School. I was the athletic director, assistant principal there, formerly. And a lot of people ask me, why do I want to come to Washington Local? And those guys back there are exactly why. I probably worked 60, 70-hour weeks at Springfield. I got a varsity football player back there, varsity softball player, two travel softball players back there. I didn't get to see a lot of their growing up. So I was looking for a position where it would free up a little bit of time in the evenings for my family, but also a chance for myself to grow as an administrator. I really do like working with the kids, and as an athletic director, you tend to game manage a lot. You work the cash boxes, you work the concessions, you work the crowds, you know, you make sure the security, everything's good there. There really wasn't a whole lot of working with kids. I talked in my interviews about potential further education. None of that was possible. I loved being the athletic director, but it was so much time that there really wasn't room for growth, and there really wasn't a whole lot of time for my family. So I just introduced really quick my wife, Leah, my oldest son, Nathan, in the back, oldest daughter here, Ariel, my two other younger daughters, Angela and Jacqueline, my younger son, Dakota, and Ryan. So,
you got them all right.
That's the Kohlhofer clan. I'm very excited to be here.
Welcome to Washington Local. Anyone else?
How do you have time for the work now with all them kids? That's a lot of work there. There you go. We know. I got four too. I know how it goes.
Alrighty. There was a motion by Mr. Hughes, a second by Mr. Sharp. Mr. Falk, please call the roll.
Ms. Canales?
Yes.
Mr. Ostrop?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0.
Look for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Ms. Canales?
Second. Second.
Mr. Sharp seconds that. Call the roll, please.
Mr. Ostrop?
Yes.
Mr. Hunter?
Yes.
Mr. Sharp?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Ms. Canales? Motion passes 5-0. Let record show that all recorded this meeting has been made on file in the Office of the Treasurer. Meeting stand adjourned at 7:48 p.m.